Blog Talk Radio.
To inform, inspire, and empower Alcoholics Anonymous sponsorship, locally and internationally, to be their very best, both personally and spiritually. This is the mission of rumradio.org, an internet radio program dedicated to carrying the message of recovery to a world plagued by alcoholism and addiction. Alcoholism and addiction is the number one health issue in our world today, and rumradio.org is actively participating in the solution. Interviews with a plethora of people sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Live Sundays at 9 p.m. Central Time, and rewound again on Saturday and Monday. Tune in to 12-Stepology at its best on rumradio.org.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. The unknown universe is all those folks that have no idea what the 12 steps look like, what they're about, where they came from, and how they have helped millions and continue to do so. That's the unknown universe, and that's what we're trying to fill in. I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, that's Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Alabama. And they do this as a public service presentation. We also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I'd like to introduce my co-host, Harold's been hanging in with us, and believe me, when you're in the program of addiction and alcoholism, people who hang in with you prove one fact, that their recovery has come to higher levels of spiritual growth. You can count on them. When people say they're going to do something and actually do it, that's the mark of spiritual recovery. Harold B. is a family intervention specialist. He does the fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe that families are the basic unit of our society. And as the family goes, so does the nation, the country, and the world. And I wanted to wish the ladies out there Happy Mother's Day for those who are mothers and those who have mothers. Oh, I think we all have mothers. Well, my mom passed on several years ago, and so there's always a little trepidation when it comes to the holiday like that. I think of her and keep her in my mind. I heard something at church today. It was interesting. When a mom's not there, the children become a curse to her. In other words, if she's not there to teach her children, her children will not grow up as she would have wished. I've heard in the rooms many times, some of the ladies would say, you know, I really want to be with my, especially new in recovery, I want to really be with my children, and then they sober up, and then they have the opportunity to be with their children, and it makes it even harder to get back. We have a lot of trouble with that. The family is being beset on all sides. A lot of the children, quite a few of the children, I would say almost most of the children, are growing up like empty lot weeds. There's no one there to teach them correct principles. And moms are so essential in that teaching process. I can't stress enough how important a mother's love, teaching, and direction it is to her children. The dad puts a big role in it, and there's no dismissing it. But let's face it, folks, most of the time dad's out, or I was, you know, making a living, and he does the best he can rearing the children. But the children really get their information initially during the formative years from mom. So this is the day we celebrate mom's ability to nurture and rear her offspring. And this is a great time to remember that children are our future. And most of the prisons today are filled with children who are alcoholics and addicts who did not get those correct principles. It's a sad state of affairs. They're living on the internet right now. No heroes again. The society is slowly disintegrating on a social fabric. Our social moral fabric is disintegrating. Harold does work with troubled families, and these are the tough families. But at least he's out there. It's like the starfish thrower. There's a million starfish on the sea, and so he's throwing them back in for life. And this other guy comes up and goes, "No, there's a million here. You're not going to make a dent." And he says, "You know, I help the ones I can." And that's the mission of Rum Radio. We help the ones we can. Keep an open mind. You might learn something. Harold, how you doing this Mother's Day?
I'm doing great, Joseph. Thank you for that great introduction. This week seems to be especially difficult for some of my families. I've got one dad who had 2 years sober. He relapsed this week and started drinking again. Very sad. His son kind of, his son has decided that his mother is to blame for dad's drinking. He really hasn't been to Alateen or anything, doesn't know about the disease of addiction. And so because his anger is coming out sideways on someone that is actually inappropriate, he's blaming his mom. He's getting into more and more trouble at school. He's been in juvie 3 times, and he now has 2 felonies, and he's only 15 years old. So, you know, it's really important to have a positive male role model around, somebody that can think straight, and recovery helps with that. So, and as a contrast, I not only do family therapy for lots and lots of families here in Sugar Land, Texas, but I also carry the message into the Fort Bend County Jail on a weekly basis and teach recovery in there every Monday night. And again, we've got a whole bunch of guys sitting in chairs, but it's actually little boys in big bodies. So you are correct. Kids are not taught the proper principles anymore. And, of course, the best teacher is by example. We can tell the kids all day long, but they are going to imitate what we do. It's all about doing. Faith without works is dead. I've been studying the book of James recently.
Amen.
So it's really great to be here. It's great to live in a country where we are free to study what we want and recover in a spirit of freedom and study spiritually the way that we want to. And I thank God for all that. And I thank Joseph for, let me mention, folks, for a moment, Joseph does not make money from this website or the radio show, rumradio.org. Not only doesn't he make any money on it, he has sunk thousands into it, improving the website as his way of giving back. This is a public service, and we want to take you back to basics, help you understand how the original people got sober and stayed sober, got into recovery. Recovery is more than sobriety. And so I just want to pat Joseph on the back for all the money he spent and the effort that he puts in and his caring heart. You know, one of our mottos in the world of recovery is, let us love you until you can love yourself. And so that's where we're coming from. I'm glad you've tuned in, and I hope you go away with something of real value today. Joseph?
Well, thank you, Harold. That's very humbling for you to say that. And, well, that's enough about me. Would someone else like to talk about me?
I'd like to thank you gratefully for having me on the show.
Welcome. This is our guest, our interview, Lynn Renee M. If you could use your last name if you wish, it's, you know, it doesn't matter. We're not AA, by the way.
Yeah, I don't care.
We're, Yeah, we're not AA, we're not CA, we're not NA. We're more like Paranoids Anonymous, where nobody will tell you where they hold the meetings. This is rumradio.org. We use the big book and the 12 and 12 and all our literature that or recovery literature that's made available. I don't see anything. On page 164, the big book says our basic text. And I use the big book because it's the basic text. It's the template of all 12-step recovery. It says this book is only meant to be suggestive. We know so little. More shall be disclosed to both you and to us if your own house is in order, that's your spiritual house. It's a statement of humility. We're open. Hey, if we could find a better way, but we find the big book and all the information thereof is germane and pertinent. It's helped for millions. If we work it exactly as it's laid out in that book, we're fine. It's when we deviate from the original understanding, that's when we run into trouble. So we try to bring it back to the basics understanding, getting started right away. So, Len, before I introduce you, let me do this. I like to start off with the third step prayer. And this is found on page 63 of the basic text of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is one of the first assignments I give to a potential sponsee. They're always potential. Initially, I qualify them. The big book calls them prospects. Prospect is a sales term, someone who has the ability to have a successful understanding of what you're trying to do. He's a prospect, like a sale. There's a good chance of a close. And the way I do it, and when he first comes in, he gets his beginner's chip. Some do. That means he's come to the agreement that there's a problem and that his life has become unmanageable. It's step one. When he picks up that and he announces himself that he's an alcoholic, actually he's done step one right there. A lot of people miss that. They miss that in Houston. They don't give him the ability to announce himself to the group. I think it's huge. And usually I grab them right after they get the chip, right after we have our prayer. We have a little benediction at the end of the meeting. And I turn around to the fella and I go, have you had enough? Yes or no? If he's had enough, he'll know. If he hasn't quite yet, he'll ask, what do you mean? Have you had enough humiliation? Have you had enough pain? Have you had enough disgrace? Have you had enough alcohol? Yes or no? Yes. Are you willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety? Huge question. Yes. He's not just telling me. He's making a commitment that he's willing to go to any length. I'm not going to ask him to do anything that's absurd, but I want to make sure that he's on board. Tell my prospective sponsees I'm willing to put as much effort and energy into his recovery as he is, no more and no less. This is his life. So if I get the two affirmatives, I'll tell them, okay, you can get well from this disease of mind, body, and spirit, but there's certain things you have to do. And the first thing I need you to do is answer Clancy's 7 questions. I have it on the website. It's under how to find the sponsee tab under the sponsorship in the navigation bar. And answer these 7 questions. Carry them with you if you're looking for a sponsee. Big book on page 93 is go find a prospect and start working on them. I'm finding them. That's what it says. That's what I'm doing. So I give them the 7 questions. Preparation. When preparation meets opportunity, it's called luck. If you're prepared, you'll find your sponsee. They're coming in the doors. They're walking right in. You don't have to go to Skid Row. You don't have to go to the hospital. You don't have to put them up. Sometimes you do, depending on the area in the club, but most of the time they're coming through the doors. Wow, that's golden. The old timers would have been beating each other up to get to these guys. They're clean. They have watches, internet connections, and automobiles. Yay! So now you ask them, okay, I need you to answer these 7 questions. I need them back tomorrow. If I get them back tomorrow, two things have happened, one or two things. Now he's ready, or if I don't get it back, is either not ready or not ready for me, which is okay. I'm not a good sponsor for everybody. You can't cookie cutter this thing. Some personalities fit, some don't. But usually the case is he thinks you got an answer, he doesn't really care about your personality. All he wants and all he knows is he's in pain, and he's willing to go to any length to achieve sobriety. That's all he knows. He doesn't know the jargon. He doesn't know the culture, but that he knows. He's got a problem. So that's key. I also agree, men with men, women with women, because it's easier to connect up with the gender, and it's very intimate, so it could easily be inappropriate. Scenario could transform from that. But if that's the only way you can go, is a non-same gender sponsor, you know what? You work the steps. We've agreed to go to any length. When you can, you could change sponsors at any time if it's not working. The key is to work the steps. The gender is a secondary condition. If you can, keep it to gender. If you can't, you work the steps. So that makes it real simple. And then once I get those back, I look at them. It doesn't matter how he answered them, because it's really about what his feelings, brings up feelings of understanding, gets him started. And the first assignment is I want him to get him a home group. He connects up in his home group. They get to know him, and this is lifeline group. I want you to get 20 or 30 men's names, if possible, as many as you can, and get permission for their phone numbers and get permission to give them a call. You know, ask permission. Yes, okay. So every day I want you to call a different fellow for the next 30 days, and I want you to ask permission to recite the third step prayer. Why? I tell them why. Gets you used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. One. Two, it connects you up with your home group. You get to know their name, and they get to know your name. Three, the third step prayer is also called a surrender prayer. It encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. And fourthly, the person he's calling might have been thinking about picking up his first drink, his first hit of crack, his first, and probably will not, but there's no guarantee. Your sponsee is already into service, which is the key to attain and maintain long-term sobriety. And this is the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen.
Amen.
Thank you.
We have Lynn
Renee M. She's an international certified paralegal specializing in international child abductions, working as a subcontract for the FBI, also a model. And she's helped women against violence, which is another, in my experience, is another part and parcel of drug and alcohol addiction, men beating on women. That, what is that? What's that about? You know, sometimes I make excuses. There is no excuse for a man to hit a woman. That should happen. But it happens all the time. I don't know why, and I believe it's because of the drugs and the alcohol. The ego gets so large that any insult is reacted in a violent manner. And it seems like the more violent they get, the more violent they get until the poor woman is dead. I mean, it's a crime, it's a shame, and I believe this all goes back to that moral fabric that's being torn. So tell us, Lynn, I'd like to know what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now.
What it was like I said, I started drinking when I was 13 and was pretty much an everyday drinker, and I guess you could call me a functioning alcoholic for about 30 years, if there is such a thing. I was a single mom. I raised my daughter. I was pretty good at hiding, you know, my addiction. Went to work. She was small, so she didn't really pay much attention to, you know, how much I was drinking. And then in about 1999, I started having panic attacks, which I knew then at that time was probably the alcohol taking a reverse effect on me. Then I continued on until about 2001, and my mom passed away. And that's when I went rock bottom. I stayed at rock bottom until 2003. I got into detox, came out, went to meetings, got a sponsor, started working steps. I was able to stay sober for 5 years, didn't do what they told me to do, stopped going to meetings. And once again, I hit rock bottom, and it wasn't until I was on the streets, and I couldn't live, and I couldn't die. So
you started drinking what? You were pretty young when you started,
13 years old, yes.
And that was at school? You were bringing what, vodka to school? You were drinking?
In my car, in my locker, on the way to school, on the way to work. When you drink 20, you know, when you drink every day, you're never sober, because we all know it takes at least 72 hours for alcohol to get out of your system. So I was pretty whatever I could get. I mean, I never got into I never drank mouthwash. I never got into that kind of thing. But I was a party girl, and I stayed that way all the way up till I was 40 years old. And then after my mother died, I didn't know how to handle things, and then I couldn't drink enough beer to get drunk. So then that's when I started drinking vodka, and that's when I hit rock bottom, and decided to go into detox. I drank vodka for a couple years. I was still able to make it to work, but I was not able to function. I was trying to be in the relationship; it didn't work. Matter of fact, that's why I'm here in Akron at this very moment, because this is the last most important amend on my list. And
go ahead.
Then I was sober for 5 years after that, but I think I would probably say I was more of a dry drunk. I fell again in 2008. I was in and out of detoxes. In 2 weeks, out 2 weeks, back in 2 weeks. Psychiatrists, medications, then you get addicted to the medications, and I was just so lost. I didn't know what I couldn't see the light. And one day I just tried to take my life, and I drank about 2/5 of vodka and took 30 Vicodin, and I couldn't live, and it didn't kill me.
Wow.
And I withdrew off that myself, and I thought, you know what? There's got to be a purpose why I'm not dead, because there's no medical reason I'm alive. I couldn't live. I couldn't die, so something had to change. And I went into detox for one last time, and a psychiatrist said something to me. And she walked over to me, and at first she walked in, and she was kind of blunt. She's like, okay, Lynn, what's your problem? And, of course, I went into the whole pity party, you know, how we are. And she took me over to the window, and she said, I want you to do something for me. And I said, what? And she goes, you see that world out there? And I said, yes. And she said, stop looking at that world. She says, start looking up. And on your way out of here, on the second floor, is a chapel that's dedicated to Dr. Bob, who used to treat his patients at St. Thomas Hospital.
Well,
and
I want you to
stop in there, and I want you to get on your hands and knees in front of that table, and I want you to just say, God, please love me. I know you love me, and I'm no better than you, so why can I not love myself? And you tell that devil, checkmate, your lie is dead. And after that, the obsession to drink left in an instant, and I've never had an obsession to pick up a drink ever again. I can be around it. I can be in a liquor store. I can be in a bar. I can be in a restaurant. I can be in a party. And I don't even think about it. The thought doesn't even cross my mind.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that.
So I did work the steps, how successful they were for me. I can't say that was exactly what brought the light into my soul. But of course, you know, I got rid of a lot of inventory. I also went through rapid trauma therapy abuse.
Give me a sec here. Now, a lot of folks say, you know, when I hear that, somebody say, oh, you were saved by grace, right? And you'll hear a lot of folks in the program say, well, I was saved by grace. But I always hear this, we're saved by grace after all that we can do. Not after all that we can talk, not after all that we can think, and not after all that we can pray.
I believe rock bottom is a fall from grace.
Yeah. And then, but you took an action, right? And then you had to take an action.
I had no choice. I couldn't die. I had to do something. God wanted me here for a purpose.
Well, really. I'm still amazed. Two fifths and 30 Vicodin. I'm shocked. Harold, that's amazing.
That is amazing.
And
that would have knocked out a
full
elephant on the charge. You know, like, wow.
Yeah, but that, you know, after all those years of drinking and being on all the prescription drugs from all the psychiatrists and things like that, you know, my body had built up such a resistance. And the best part about it, I have not one single health problem, and I'm in my 50s.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah. I have a bad knee that I've had surgery on because I fell on it several years ago playing tennis, but other than that, I have no health problems whatsoever.
That's a wonderful.
Definitely, God has something out there for me special, and I just continue to. I practice five to six main steps every day. First of all, I wake up every morning grateful that I'm alive. I lay there and I meditate. Just look out at the sky. Bless God. I'm not going to drink today. Please help me get through this day without drinking. Please help me to cope with anything that comes my way and let it be a blessing and not an overwhelming circumstance, because I do believe that even bad things sometimes can be blessings. You know, sometimes you meet a bad friend, but through that friend you meet a better person on the other end. So that person's in your life for a reason. And
yes.
And at the end of the day, I take my inventory and pray to God, just let it all go. Clear my conscience, and I go out and I help others in any way I can. Most of the girls I've sponsored, they seem to migrate towards me, are young girls that have been sexually abused, and I've done about six of them.
Wow.
And they're around 17 and 18 years old, and I've never been sexually abused. So maybe they look at me as like a mommy. I don't know what it is, and I've been very successful with four. One's now happily married, and one's in a 118-month treatment center in Scotland. Another one's in a 120-day treatment center in Richmond, Virginia, and the other one is doing just perfectly fine, and she got off heroin.
Wow.
So those were four. The other two have just kind of, I'm not quite sure what happened to them. You know, they tend to disappear.
Yeah.
So I just pray they're okay. You know, I've tried to contact them, but I've moved. So, you know, it's kind of hard. Because I've moved around quite a bit. I have my own nonprofit organization, and I don't get paid. It's called WAVE, Women Against Violence. And basically just what I do is I team up with homeless shelters, societies, raise scholarships for needy children. You know, there's a lot of kids who will never have the opportunity to go to college. They're straight-A students, even though they come from a bad family.
Right.
To have that chance to go to college and be what they want to be, to give them, especially if the roots are already there, if they're doing good in school and they have good roots, then you can help them get wings. So,
I'd like to regress a little bit. I wanted to know a little bit more about the steps on your last go around. Now, did you found the right sponsor? She found you. How did that work? Did you find her? Did she find you? And you started working the steps. Now you had worked before.
I never could find a permanent sponsor.
Okay.
When I was in Clearwater, Florida, working the steps, the only kind of sponsors I would get would be temporary sponsors. So I worked the 12 steps, but I worked them with 12 different sponsors, and I worked a couple of the steps in a rehab center. So I didn't do them all at one time with one person. And it took me a couple of years, and I wrote my fourth step four times.
Mm.
And my way of getting rid of that, I went I went with my sponsor at the time, and her and I used to go to rehabs and detoxes and speak, and I had her come home with me, and we took it out in the backyard, and I burned it.
Now, that was before you did a fifth step or before you finished
the
step? Yes,
that was before I did a fifth step. That was before I did. No, that was after I did the fifth. That was at the end.
You did the fifth step with that sponsor, though, did you?
I did all 12 steps.
Oh, you did? Okay. So
yeah,
I missed
and
that.
Then
okay.
The one
so
sponsor
the
I kind of still saw, the one sponsor I still kind of saw sometimes, and I asked her, her and I went to speak at a rehab, and I asked her if she would come home with me and burn my fourth step, and she said yes, and she did.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've been around 16 years, so I've heard that. I don't, as a sponsor, I don't understand the mental twist that goes along. I could see maybe burning it after you've worked the 12 steps, because that information, to me, is kind of essential to derive your sixth step and your eighth step and the ninth step for sure. Now, you don't need it for 10, 11, and 12 because that's
right.
Steps 4 through 9 taking in a single package in the present. So you don't need that information anymore if you want to burn it at that point. Before that, I just don't – you see that? It worked for you, evidently, so you're still sober. But I think that's a really good resource that you're missing – with the other until you get to the 10th step. You see that
well,
or no?
I kind of try to feel out my sponsees with the 4th step because now I've had two girls that were so traumatically sexually abused that a lot of them didn't want to relive what they went through on the 4th step. So they didn't want to write it down, so they would rather talk it out. I don't know if that's right or not. I know you're supposed to write it down, but it was very traumatic. And actually, those are the two that we did work the steps, but then they had to go on into long-term rehab as well, even though they were already detoxed and had worked the steps. These girls were injecting fingernail polish with needles. And drinking
brother.
Turpentine and serious street addicts.
Wow.
So they had been. One girl. Her grandfather made her bury her own or dig her own grave in the backyard.
Oh, brother.
So for her to relive that, you know, I'm not a qualified counselor. So for me to have her relive that, if she doesn't feel like she can go through it at that time, I don't want to put her into shock and turn her away from the program.
That's a tough call. What do you think about that, Harold?
Oh, you're right on the mark. That is really true. The limitation that we often find with someone who's been traumatized is that they have to be able to tolerate a certain level of being uncomfortable in order to do the work. And if you find someone that's really, really having a difficult time, then you do have to adapt to whatever they can tolerate at the moment, really take it easy. So that's very, very wise. I really, as a licensed therapist, I acknowledge that you did the right thing there, easing off, helping people do what they can do without being flooded with emotions and go
because
into a...
Because how horrible would I feel to make them relive that and then they go out and relapse?
That's right. You are...
And I'm not a qualified counselor.
Hill here. That is...
I had enough trouble myself. So, you know, for me to feel like I could actually counsel somebody through that kind of trauma, I know I myself had to go through rapid trauma therapy.
Uh-huh. Yes.
So, that was just the way I was able to handle it because of the... These two girls had been so severely abused at such a young age that they needed more help beyond what I could just do with the 12 steps. I could sponsor them through as much as I could, but then I also was able to hook them up and get them into long-term treatment. And one girl was actually in London, and she had to go to Scotland. So we did it by Skype.
There you go.
But
what is
that?
Is that EMDR? Is that what you're talking about?
I'm sorry?
The rapid eye movement therapy? The trauma
no,
therapy?
No, it's not a form of really hypnosis. It's kind of a, they tap into your subconscious and you, I actually went back to an event that something happened when I was 2 years old that the therapist had brought out, and it was really stupid, but maybe to a 2 year old it wasn't. My mom had a strange man in the house, and I didn't feel it was right. You know, maybe it was, maybe wrong. Maybe he's a Hoover guy at that time back in those days. You know, I don't know. Didn't the Hoover guy used to come to your door?
I'm sure.
You know, the Hoover salesman. You know, I don't know. But anyway, I was angry. I was angry over that, but I didn't realize I was angry over that. But it was in my subconscious, and a therapist actually brought that out.
I didn't know that. That's good information for me. I usually what I'll do. It was information. I have it on the website. I got from a fella who went through the steps in a particular interesting way. It was one side. It's called Brief. It was around about 60 years ago. All you use is one side of a legal pad. You put the name, the date, and the incident. And that's it. So this way your sponsee can cover all that's bothering them immediately. No more than you could fill up on a page. And then when you sit down with them, you go over the rest of it. The big book only says it has to be written. But I haven't run into anybody that's had that extent of trauma. So this is really good information for me.
These girls sought me out, and I did not have good bonding with my parents. I was an only child, and my mother had trouble having children and came from a family of 12, so I'm not sure her and I ever really bonded. And so I was always kind of had a lot of anxiety and was kind of lost as a child. So I'm not sure I had real good roots, even though I grew up in a great house, a great neighborhood, great school system, all that stuff. But that doesn't mean you have roots. You know, you can grow up in a shack and have better roots than a mansion. And no, that's what a lot of these girls had gone through. The one was molested by her grandmother, her grandfather and her mother for many, many years since she was a young age. I mean, that was just way too much that I could handle. And she would talk to me about it. And I sent her the Book of James because she didn't even believe in God. And actually, she's doing quite well. She's out of the 18-month Scotland treatment, and she's pregnant. Of course, she's not married, which is not a good thing, but she's sober, and she works on it daily. She still feels worthless. She still feels lost. She doesn't have any friends. You know, she doesn't have her parents. You know, her parents were never there for her. There's some really sad cases out there from what I've worked with. Maybe I pick those types, or they migrate towards me. I don't know what it is. But I've never just had like a normal alcoholic come to me and say, you know, will you sponsor me? I've always gotten like young girls that, you know, want somebody that they can like talk to that they can trust, almost like a mom. Matter of fact, they call me mom.
You know, that's a real tough scenario. The best thing, though, I find for a girl like that would be to turn your mind to someone you can help. I would bet you dollars to donuts that if she got in to a sponsorship position and she started doing regular 12-step work, her self-esteem eventually would come back.
If they've ever had self-esteem.
You've got to start somewhere.
I never had self-esteem, so I had to find self-esteem. Actually, I call it God esteem. The first time I got sober, I didn't get esteem, I got an ego.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And so you got to be careful with that one. And then to learn how to have fun. This girl didn't know a lot of them, they don't know what fun is, you know, their whole life's been a nightmare. So But, you know, the meetings I've gone to, you know, here in the United States and stuff, in Clearwater and Florida, I mean, we have some really good recovery sources in Florida. I know a lot of directors. Anybody that calls me anytime, I can get them into a rehab at a drop of a dime. I know state-funded ones. I have a radio station I work for out of Palm Beach, Florida. She does a radio talk show, and so if I need help placing somebody and I can't find a place for them in my area, then she can.
Who is
so
that?
I have a lot of resources to help people.
What's the girl's name? I forget her name. Just slipped my
Debbie
mind.
Debbie Strand.
Yeah. Yeah, she's quite active in Facebook and in recovery. Yeah, she's a very interesting girl.
Yeah, she is.
How long has she been sober?
6 years.
Oh, good.
Yeah, she was on crack. She was on crack, living in crack houses.
Really? Wow,
believe it
amazing.
Or not. Now look at her. Lives on the beach and drives a convertible Corvette and has her own radio show. And, you know, she's come a long, long way with no help.
Wow,
and
that's very impressive.
She helps a lot of people. So I work with her a lot. I've gone down to a couple of fundraisers. And she was actually supposed to come up and speak in where I live at one time, but somebody in our family had to go to the hospital or something, so that got canceled. So I've done quite a bit of work with her.
So now your passion, well, you do that now. Do they have free detoxes down there? Do you have free detox?
Yes, we do. We have state-funded detoxes. We have PAR, Operation PAR, which I think there's a branch in Fort Myers. There's one in Clearwater. And actually, I think there's a couple other ones now. And the David Lawrence Center in Naples will take you. If you just walk in off the streets, they'll take you, even though they're not state-funded. They won't turn anybody away. These are just things we know. They don't have the heart to turn anybody away. And then, of course, I know some that have directors at some really fancy ones that, you know, cost quite a bit of money that are really nice.
Would make a good app, a phone app, to do all the free detoxes in a zip code.
Well, you know, the Watershed does that. The Watershed.
Oh, do they? Oh, good.
The Watershed here in Florida, if you call their 800 number, they will find, and you're in the United States, they will find you a rehab and detox, insurance or not.
Really?
Yes. It's the Watershed. I believe they're in Fort Lauderdale.
So I could get a director. You don't have the number available right now, do you? No.
I don't, because I can't get it. It's just called the Watershed. If you look it up,
Watershed
they have a huge website.
In Fort Lauderdale?
Around that area, Palm Beach. It's a huge facility. Huge. It's like Passages Malibu, one of those.
That's
except
great.
It's
important
except
because
it's a 12-step program, not acupuncture and I actually read that book, the Alcoholism and the Cure. I read every recovery book out there, pretty much, and I actually like that book.
What's the name of it?
Alcohol, the one that Pax. What's his name? Paxton or whatever name he advertises on TV, the Alcoholism and the Cure.
Oh, yeah, $24.95 and I'll fix you up.
Yeah, I sent for the CDs. I still listen to them in my car, and actually, very good story.
Well,
as a Harold, you said you're a licensed counselor. As a licensed counselor, you can see where, you know, they need sometimes to get to the underlying problem. Which is what Passages Malibu works on.
Yes.
The causes and conditions.
Yes. If you need anything detox anywhere in the United States, just look up the Watershed on the internet. You'll find it. You can actually ask for Lisa Henderson. She's my friend.
Oh, good. Okay. Because usually when an addict really wants to go to detox, you need it right now before the thought goes away, where he accumulates enough money to get back to the crack house. So,
in Florida, I don't know if they have it in every state, but there's a thing in Florida called a Baker Act. And you can Baker Act yourself, and you'll get in immediately. All you have to do is call 911 and say you think you might hurt yourself, and they'll come get you and they'll take you.
You might be a danger to yourself or someone else. Is that it?
Right. But it'll get you in if you're that serious.
You have to actually say you are suicidal.
I mean, you could call these places and you're on a 2-week waiting list. By then, an addict could be dead.
If
you want to get into power or someplace like that, and they tell you call back every hour, well, you might not be live in an hour. You might not be live in 3 days.
No, I agree. I think it's important to have that information available immediately. That's why I think. Because you see people that they don't have a car, they're hitchhiking, but they got a smartphone. So, you know, I think the app is really the way to go, you know, where they can, here's the Watershed app. I can find a detox, and I'm on my way.
I think I would agree with you more if I had a really good phone, but my phone is really bad.
Join the club. I gotta have to go buy a new one.
Joseph has a bad one.
I can't do anything on my phone.
So now you work.
Hopefully, I'll be able to invest in a better one.
Usually, my experience is that one has to be done perfectly, which is the problem, whatever that looks like. Three is really always in the mix. You know, you give it to God, and then you take it back. We give it up, we take it back. It's an endless cycle. Nobody ever gives it all up all the time. Not my experience. Where six, you know, it says we're entirely ready. In essence, no one is ever entirely ready. You can only be as ready as you can be at any given time.
At any given time, exactly.
And seven is we're turning it over to God again, because we're going to let him take away those defects in his time and his way, his timing, not my timing. So seven's always in play because the character defects come out. And then 10, 11, and 12, 10 and 11 are really connected up. We do, it's steps 4 through 9, taken in the single package, taken in the present. So when our character defects come up and we have to make an amends, you know why it's always better to make amends right away? Because it's easier to eat crow while it's still warm. But
the amend I'm making here, the reason I flew up here to Akron to make this amend is kind of a long story. I won't even go into it, but it took me a lot of time to figure out how I was going to approach it. It's kind of a family thing, and it's not my family, but our families were friends, and I was married to their son. It ended really bad because I was an alcoholic, and it ruined the relationship between our families, and then my mom died, so it was a bad scene, and I didn't know if I could ever fix this bridge or not. So I prayed about it for years, and then it just so happened that one of my friends ran into one of the family members at a grocery store and said she knew me, and they wrote down the number and said, have her call me, and it still took me a couple months, and then I finally made the call.
And then
I got on a plane, and I've been here 2 weeks having a blast. spent Mother's Day with one of the most special ladies in my life.
How nice. Yeah. People don't realize when you actually do the work, these things happen on a fairly regular basis. Miracles that happen all the time anyway. The thing is, once you've worked a good recovery program, you get to see them. You get to see the miracles that happen every day.
There was a lot of bitterness in this amend, so I didn't, I had to get over my bitterness too, which took me a long time. Because, you know, we still tend to blame others. And every once in a while, those bad character defects come back. And lucky I didn't burn too many bridges. My daughter was very supportive. She tried to help me, but she didn't know what to do. Of course, nobody knows what to do with us. And finally she gave up. And but I never had enablers, which that was a lucky thing. You know, but yeah, this was the hardest amend for me to make, because I was thoroughly embarrassed. I just said, God, and I got on a plane and came up here and just spilled my guts, and I'm sorry. I'm not perfect, but I'm better, and I will be better every day.
What
I promise I can be good today, and hopefully I'll be better tomorrow. And that's the only promise I can make.
Have you made the amends yet or no?
Oh, absolutely.
And what was the reception?
Oh, yeah, I've already been here a week and a half, so.
Huh.
Yeah, it went very well.
Oh, good.
It went 100,000 times better than I would have ever expected. So I think God sometimes provides the timing as well.
Oh, no, there's no doubt about it. I tell my sponsees,
for this amend, some time needed to go by.
No, sure, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of times, most of the time, people will be glad that you've made the amends because they understand that you were ill, you know, you were suffering from the disease, and they appreciate the fact that everybody's got something. Nobody makes it out of here clean. So they're good with that. But I tell some of my sponsees, I says, you got to remember, though, you might be going up to somebody that just got a speeding ticket. Their doctor just told them they had 6 months to live. The wife just said that they wanted a divorce. He might have just lost his job. And you're the last guy that he would wanted to see in this whole life, and it's like insult to injury, and here you come. So
right.
What they say or what they do has nothing to do with you in the sense is, can mercy rob justice? You know, kiddo,
right.
Sometimes it's just justice, and you got to sit there and you take it. You don't have
right.
to grovel. You just be polite, stand your ground, and if they have something to say, you allow that also. My experience is most of the time people embrace you, and they also ask for forgiveness themselves, but not always. Have you found that?
No. Actually, every amend I've made has been successful.
Well, I consider them successful no matter what happens, as long as
you... Well, I mean, no, actually, I'm still very close to a lot of people that were around me at my very worst. I didn't burn any permanent bridges. Like I didn't,
you,
like, you know, like
yeah,
my daughter
yeah.
or, you know, anything like that. I did not burn any permanent bridges.
Oh,
everybody during my addiction and now I'm still friends with and
oh,
very
good
friends. So.
And so that you do work with child advocacy, you're doing that too now?
Actually, I got laid off after the recession, so that's when I started my nonprofit organization, because I had a little bit of pension coming in, and I decided just to take a year off, totally work on my recovery, totally work on my service work, decide what I want to do with my service work and how far I wanted to take it, maybe pursue my career in counseling, not quite sure. Right now, just kind of taking it easy, doing some hobbies I've never done before, and it's just been a pretty easy. This year has been a very content year for me. I'm very comfortable in my own skin. I feel like I've got a very good grasp on recovery. I'm very close to God, and every day I have the same routine to practice to stay sober. And every day so far, it's worked. So it's working for me. So as long as it's working for me, that's what I'm going to continue to do.
You know, in the big book, it says that our sobriety is contingent upon the maintenance of a daily spiritual condition. But I always like to think of what maintains itself of itself. Nothing, really. You're either growing spiritually or you're declining spiritually. And if you're
exactly.
declining spiritually, your recovery and then even your sobriety becomes tentative. So you feel like you're continuing to grow spiritually. And what does that look like?
To continue to grow spiritually, well, the difference. I don't fear things. If I died tomorrow, I wouldn't be afraid.
Oh, good for you.
Where before I lived in fear of everything. Things I would not normally do, I'll go out and do. Different sport, zip lining. I'm not afraid to get up in front and speak in front of people. I'm fearless. God's with me all the time. And if I do get a fear, immediately I turn it over to God. Immediately. Where I used to dwell on it, and then that would cause a relapse, and that years ago.
That's interesting. I know fear is one of the big offenders. There's no doubt about it.
And anxiety.
All God does always says, be not fearful. It's said in all the scriptures, be not fearful. I am with
you. And somebody said to me one time, do you love yourself? When I said, no, I hate myself. They said, well, are you better than God? And I said, well, of course not. Well, God loves you, so what makes you think you can't love you?
Oh, I like that logic. Sure, you bet.
I do too. So those are little things I think about every day when I'm, not. Today's a real hard day because my mom's passed away, like you
sure.
were saying earlier. And today was a little, I was kind of down. It's like, I was over at these people's house and they were like family to me growing up, and, it's just, I loved it, but at the same time, it was a little emotional, but it was good. It was all good. It's better than sitting. I see a lot of people recover, and then they just hide in their house, and I hate to see that more than anything. Or they'll go to meetings, and that's it. But they never grow. They never go out and they try new things or you never know where God's going to put you, when and where.
Absolutely. Harold, do you have anything you'd like to add or any questions?
Gosh, this has just been a great program. So many people that I've worked with and heard about who have great recovery all share one common skill, and that is when they're feeling cravings, they ask God to remove that craving, and God does.
Yes, he does,
and I haven't heard any other approach that works other than asking God.
I don't get
God,
the craving, I get the overwhelmness.
Right.
And as soon as I start feeling that overwhelmness, then that means I'm trying to take back control. And that's when I tell God, please take it.
There you go. Exactly.
And now it's almost immediate. It's an almost immediate reaction.
It's amazing, isn't it? We're really blessed.
Yes.
This has been a great...
I mean, it could be the smallest thing. Like, I hate going into Walmart because it makes me anxious. Don't ask me why. Stupid. But... it's like, God, please go into this Walmart with me because I hate Walmart.
What do they call
I know it sounds silly,
agoraphobia?
But...
what is that, Harold? It's agoraphobia? Fear of crowds?
I didn't know. It's just a big store, and, there's too many things there. It's overwhelming, and, I don't know. Maybe I just don't like Walmart. If I'm going in for shampoo, I have to go in and get shampoo and come back out.
Fear of Walmart. Walmartophobia.
And Sam's Club. It's like.
They're all, but. We're about to wind up. If there was one thing you were going to tell the ladies out there that to help them attain and maintain long term sobriety, what would that be, Lynn? What would you tell them?
If they've already worked the steps and they're in recovery?
No. Somebody that hasn't worked the steps, they're listening out there and they're not sure what to do. What would you tell them?
What would I tell them? I would ask them a couple questions first to try to feel out where they are in their life, how bad their addiction is, And I would either, if depending on the age, I would either recommend, and their situation, I would recommend a detox rehab, or I would recommend taking them. Of course, I would take them to a meeting if they wanted to go. Immediately drive them to one, find one, look up a meeting for them. I would kind of give them their choices. You know, give them some choices. What can they do? I can't give them advice, but I can tell them that there are services out there. There's a lot of people out there that are like us. And don't feel alone because I'm here. I've been through every detox in America probably. I've spoken and I've seen it. I've seen the ugliest. What is it that you want to know? If you want into a detox, I'll help you get into detox. If you want to go to a meeting, I'll drive you to one right now.
That's great.
And never give up.
Somebody's out there and they heard that there is a solution. It's not the end of the road.
Never give up. As long as you're breathing, there's always hope. No matter how, I don't care if you're on the street or in a mansion.
I'll say this. I came up with this. In our meetings, we share our experience, strength, and hope. An experience is an inventory of our past mistakes. That's how we relate to each other. Strength is the ability to lift and carry. We lift our fellows and we carry the message of recovery. That's what keeps us sober. And hope is the belief that our lives will continue to improve when we do the next right thing. The next right thing is not to take that first drink of alcohol, that first
right.
hit of crack, or whatever. To clean house as outlined in the 12 steps found in our basic text of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and trusting God and the process that he gave us. It works, folks. It really does. Always
it
do
works.
The next right thing. It'll surprise some and amaze the rest.
Yes.
Well, Lynn, thank you so much for your time. It's been very enlightening, and I enjoyed
well,
the conversation.
Thank you for having me on. I hope I didn't bore you too much.
Oh, no, you were good. You were good. You said, you know, there's nothing stronger than the truth. And this is the truth of your experience. I just pray that information will hit another lady somewhere, and she'll know that there's a way out of that, of her dilemma. It works, folks. It really does. My sponsor told me, Joseph, the reason why you go and pick up your milestone chips is not because to show people who you are. It's to show the newcomer that even a jerk like you can get sober.
he
was a tough guy. And it's true. If I can do it, you can do it.
When they're hopeless, I tell them, use a little reward system. If you've had a good day and you've gone without a drink all day long, reward yourself, even if it's as simple as a bubble bath with candles or 20 minutes reading a book, whatever it is that you like to do, because most addicts don't know what they like to do. They don't have hobbies. They don't know these things because
right.
everything
I'd like the bubble bath with candles.
Yeah. You like the bubble bath. A piece of candy, a bowl of ice cream. Reward yourself every day, even if it's a five-minute thing, something small. Go to a thrift store, buy yourself, start an exercise program, go do a belly dancing class, something fun, get into things, stay busy. But always, no matter what, somehow reward yourself because you deserve it. You just made it through that day.
That is good inspiration.
And thank God every night that you made it through that day and that he'll help you make it through the next one.
Exactly.
I like to think
and then get
every,
it again.
Every morning comes with a promise, another promise of a sober day.
Yep.
Thanks, Lynn. Thanks, Harold. In closing, I'd like to say Rum Radio is in 151 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,800 towns, cities, and villages, and we've gone over 300,000 hits to the website. There's no money being made, and we're anonymous to the 11th tradition. Not on Facebook. It didn't work out that way, but that's the way it goes. It's a good work. It's a back-to-basics program. It's all program. It's spiritual, and it's humorous. Take a look, folks. You'll be impressed. You'll like what you see. Thanks again, and remember.
I came up here on this trip, and I've laughed so hard in the last week and a half that I've probably laughed in the last 10 years.
Oh, that's great.
And laughing
is so good
for the soul.
Remember, we'll see you on the radio, rumradio.org.
Okay. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.